Hey, good morning. We are in this really incredible series. It is a gorgeous series called Garden versus Yard. And it's really all centered on this belief and this undercurrent that every human being wants to flourish. That deep down, at the core of a human heart, is the desire to grow and to keep growing. To become the full, what, versions of themselves. That is really the undercurrent of all this. And as we move through this series, we're going to feel more of that, the challenge of that, but also the excitement and the inspiration of that. And for me, this morning, I was thinking about the antithesis of that kind of growing and that, flourishing. It would be something like boredom or burnout. Burnout is that idea that I pour myself into something, but there's just nothing at the end of that, and it doesn't give me life. And so I'm expending all that energy. On the other side of that is boredom, which is like I don't participate at all because I can't see the value in it whatsoever for me. And both are really driven by a vision issue, what captivates my heart. I won't say who, but someone in my house said I'm bored recently. Of course, I'm like frantically doing many things in the house, around the house. And when I hear I'm bored, I can think of a billion things that this young man could do to not be bored. And of course, I said, hey, would you like to mow the lawn with me, Mr. Board? And of course, he was like, no thanks. Not because he doesn't have the capacity, but because he can't quite see the value in it. Of course, if I said, I'll pay you $5, he's like, I'm all in, right? In that moment, it's really not about would he ever do it. It's more about what captivates his heart in that moment to go and do that. Right? I might geek out about how to manicure a yard, but of course, if that's not what he wants to do, it doesn't matter. It's all about what you see and what captivates you to continue to do that. That's what Jesus wants to set up and what we're trying to build through this series. And we're going to go into John 15 in just a minute. And just to set the stage, this is what we call kind of the farewell upper room discourse, where Jesus is imparting very much his last words before he goes to the cross and the resurrection. And in that cross and resurrection, what he's trying to do is say, like, hey, a little bit of a look back on this. What John is saying is, like, this is what we went through. And just before he gets into this gorgeous vision, this thing that captivates the idea of growing as a follower of Christ, he begins to outline the idea of the Holy Spirit working through people and communities. And so everything we read in John 15, as symbolic and beautiful as it is really about the Spirit of God doing something unique in every human being and every community that professes to know him as Lord and Savior. Okay? So that's what we're going to do. So if you have a Bible, turn to John 15. If not, it'll be on your screen. And if you're wondering why I have to wear these things, it's because I got old. John 15. It says this. Jesus is now leaning into this, and he says, I am the vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you, meaning they've been discipling, even though they don't get the entire gospel. They're already being discipled, right? The cross and the resurrection hasn't happened. So they're listening, they're following, they're learning. They're already in that place of you are pure, you're being pruned, you're being, right? All of that is already happening. And then he says in verse 4, which is really the core of all of this, abide in me and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. And then he defines who's playing what in this beautiful picture of growth. I am the vine. Jesus is the vine. You are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Of course you can do things. You can, right now if I said, let's play tag, which would be awesome. That would be an amazing moment. You could do it. You'd be reluctant, but you'd do it. But this nothing has everything to do with this verse 4 where it says, abide in me and I in you, that really beautiful connection. And note here, it's not just us abiding in him and this vine is in no way interacting. It's about him abiding in us too. It's 100% mutual. It's 100% reciprocal. Everybody is all in on this vision of growing and becoming the full versions of ourselves. And so the more I'm abiding in Jesus, the more I'm becoming what? Like him. Him, Jesus. Now, why that's so core goes back to the early parts, the first garden. These are the same elements in the first garden. There's a tree, there are vines, there are fruit, and the Spirit of God is moving over the universe, and God the Father, who's the vine dresser in this illustration, is, but in the Garden of Eden, is building a humanity, a world, a kingdom. And he's building that kingdom, and it looks gorgeous. And he gives everybody an idea of what humanity is supposed to look like. It is the image of God. This humanity, the full humanity, but it's marred, it's tainted. And as history goes on, sin is broken into the world. And of course, sin is not just what is done that is wrong and against God, but what is done to us too. And there's systemic things that now begin to permeate through all of history. And now no one can see. It's the distortion of what it looks like to be fully human, to thrive the way we were meant to thrive, is completely lost. And so God pokes a hole through the universe, comes into the world, puts on humanity and flesh, though fully God, and says, I'm here to show you what it looks like to be fully human again. And so really, the vision is to be our full selves, is to grow and to become our full human being selves. And he wants us to see that and know what that's like in a world that is so broken, so desperate. He's saying, this is what humanity can really look like. And in really Portland culture, there's not a single person that doesn't want to flourish. There's not a single person who doesn't see that aspect of, I could become this extraordinary human being, this great person, one day. That really resonates with every human being in this space, outside of this space, and beyond. That there is this picture of becoming fully human. And I know some of my coworkers know for a fact that I am a believer, a follower of Jesus. And they sometimes say, hey, you know, I really like all of that, but, you know, I'm not the religious type, I'm not a spiritualist, I'm not all those things, and I don't really get into the God thing. And I always tell them, like, when I read John 15, I don't see religion. I don't see irreligious stuff either, but I don't see religion. I don't see rigidity. In fact, I tell everyone, I follow Jesus because I want to become fully human, the way God has always wanted us to be. And so I follow him, and I live with him, and I breathe him, and I understand what he wants for the world. Because when I do that, I'm becoming my full flourishing self, what I always dreamed about. Now, to really understand this, he begins to drill down. And in verse 2, he begins to talk about this idea of fruit in 3 and 4. Fruit, 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 fruit. And the thing about fruit is that when you look at through the Old Testament, the narrative of God, fruit is very symbolic. Vine is too. Vine always used to refer to Israel. And then when we get to this illustration, now he is the vine. So he's saying, I'm the true Israel now. And the fruit is always symbolically something that we bear. Fruit is always driven by character. It's always about character. Paul says in Galatians 5, and you can put that on the screen about fruit, that there are fruits of the Spirit. There's gentleness, there's love, there's joy, there's peace, there's goodness, there's faithfulness. There's this thing called self-control. And when you look at this list, this is a pretty unique list. If we could, in any way, the Spirit of God working within us, taking on his nature, become this. We're not just taking on character for the sake of character. We're literally taking on the nature of God. That's a pretty powerful statement. That we could be these things would mean we would be really unique human beings for the world. Right? If you've looked at any kind of, if you studied any athlete, there's no athlete that says, hey, you know, it just came to me naturally. No, there's something within that builds that athleticism that makes them great one day. Harvard did this study on multiple people and excellent people in their industry. And at the top of the list over and over and over again is someone who is character driven. Because something must build that so that you become this one day. And here Jesus is saying, in me, in the Spirit, I become love, joy, peace, patient, kind, good, faithful, gentle, self-control. Right? So if you're running a team and you're not doing so well because you're so anxious and you're starting to make decisions without actually thinking through things and the team is falling apart and you're not being a great manager, your struggle isn't with anxiety. Your struggle is probably with peace. Patience. I had this student tell me recently, like, she wanted to be this incredible physician one day, but she's not good at math because in her school district, there is not a single math teacher. So she has to homeschool to take math. But she needs calculus to get to the next level. I mean, this is what she really wants to be a doctor. She wants to serve the world. And I said, hey, listen, what would it look like if you took another year? Because your problem isn't your capacity. Your problem, your vision is there, but you don't have. We're going to have to be patient here. We're going to have to do that. To become this fruitful person, this extraordinary human being in the world requires God to well within people to become patient, joy, peace, patience, all of that, right? All of that. So that's what fruit is, and that's the picture of becoming flourishing human beings, and God is saying, indwelling in us his spirit as we follow him more and more, that we can become these things, and this will produce what we are in the world one day. Now, the question becomes, what catalyzes this? And I'll just give it on the front side. It's going to be this thing called pruning, and the second is going to be this thing called prayer, asking. And I'm just going to go to this verse 2 one more time here, and it says, every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And any branch, right, and every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. And I love the picture of more fruit. It's not like, okay, we're just going to do the same fruit. It's more. Right? That we are always progressing, that we are always in process, that we never arrive, that there are no dead ends here with our lives. I mean, tell me how many of you like to drive somewhere and you didn't know that there was a dead end and you came to a dead end and you go like, that's great. I love dead ends. Dead ends are wonderful. Let's do dead ends all day. Nobody likes a dead end. And certainly Jesus doesn't either, because that's not how we were designed. We were designed to grow and keep growing and build on that. Everything that we are continues to grow. God wastes nothing. He uses everything. And so here he says, every branch that he takes away. Now, the translation of take away, I think it's really hard here. And you don't need to know Greek, because if you did, that would be a really amazing thing, but you don't. But as I was looking at this, I was saying, oh my gosh, the translation of take away actually is literally lift up. It's not a throwing out. Let's be clear here. It's painting Jesus as, if you could imagine vines that have fallen off the trellis, Jesus and the vine trees are picking up those vines and putting them back on the trellis so that they can grow, because they're struggling to bear fruit. That's the picture. So gentle hands, but probably bold cuts on those other branches that have been growing. But it's time to cut. It's time to prune. It's time to take away. Or maybe the broader sense of this passage is to say what? It's to help people, help us have growth opportunities, right? To challenge us in something that helps us grow. It's that sense of pruning. So we can become these full people who can, again, begin to think about this almost curating of growth. Have you been up to the Japanese gardens, right? Yes? No? I love it up there, because it's so curated. It's just so, everything is so intentional up there. And I go every spring, because up in the spring, I see the same trees that they've been pruning. And I've been watching this one tree for a long time. And I sit in the same spot, and I sip my tea, and I read, and I reflect, and I love being in all that energy that I feel when I'm there with God. And I always look at this one tree, and I swear these master sculptors, these gardeners work on this tree, and I've seen them work on these trees in such a systematic way. And every year they work on a portion of the tree. And finally I just said, like, hey, what is the thinking around this? And he says, well, we use all of the kind of the work around it, because we know that each part of this tree needs to be worked on. And you don't work on all of it. You don't cut the whole thing down, otherwise it would die. But they work through the tree because they know each part of the tree, based on where the sun is hitting and based on the weather and how they do it, they work on the tree seasonally. And they're not thinking about the next season. They're actually thinking 3 or 4 seasons down the road. And so they're pruning this tree, and it's like, you know, if you're seeing city construction workers, you know how you're like, how many guys and women and men does it take to move a manhole? There are 30 people staring at it like this. Well, there are these master sculptors who are looking at this portion of the tree, and they're literally looking at this tree, and then you can see them go like this. And it just looks so serious. Like, this is the cut. Here we go. Yeah. Right? And you go like, ah. Like, and there's this moment where you go, okay. You're preparing it for years down the road, not tomorrow, years. And I know sometimes we shake our fists and we say, how dare you, God? How dare you pull away? How dare you, God, take away? How dare you, God, move in this way to make me do these things? And I understand how hard that is. But I think he's okay with that response. If you read the Psalms, you see a lot of anger coming out of David. God's not losing his cool there. I think, you know, but God's response, as I look at John 15, and I think of Jesus, I think while we might be mad at him saying, woe is me, I think God is saying, well, how is you? How is you? Because God is taking you through this incredible moment of growth and opportunity for you to grow and be inspired by what's next in your life. So pruning, that's the big part. But how do you work through that pruning? I mean, that's hard. And he says in the second piece of this is prayer or asking. He says in verse 6, if anyone does not abide in me, he's thrown away like a branch that withers, and the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. And if that sits with you wrong, it's supposed to. If it doesn't bother you just a little bit, this is about a branch, that likes dead ends and chooses the dead end over and over again to their detriment. And he's saying, but there's a better way. And he says in verse 7, if you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask for whatever you wish and it will be done for you. By this my Father is glorified that you bear much fruit. So prove to be my disciples. So prove to be my disciples. Ask for whatever you wish, right? Ask whatever you want and it will be given to you. I would probably pray right now if that were in that kind of incorrect interpretation. I'd probably pray for an F-150 and I would get a truck right now. That is absolutely not what is happening. In the context of fruit, though, it's like pray for the fruit. Right? Pray for the fruit. Someone said something to you that was so mean. It just floored you. And every time you see this person, it traumatizes you. It builds with you in an anxiety you can't imagine. Every time. And you know what you need to do. You need the courage to protect yourself. You need the courage also, in some sense, to forgive. And while that might be what you need to do, what you need to be is loved. And so you pray for God's love to work in you. Because how can you forgive someone if you've never felt love yourself? And so you pray for the fruit, right? The Spirit of God to help you with love. That's the asking. And of course, please don't misunderstand me. If we're unhealthy, if we're going through pain and suffering, of course we pray for healing. Of course we pray for the best outcomes. But if you've ever been with someone on their deathbed, or if you've ever seen and experienced a closeness yourself, the thing is you fully know you also need to be praying for what? The peace to actually do all of that, to get to the end of that. You're praying for patience, steadfastness, right? The asking is every bit a part of how you move through this catalyzing growth process where you are growing and flourishing because God is going to do something really great through you one day later. That's the vision. So if I were to ask you here and just stop here, that's the picture, that's the vision. Can I ask, how would you know if you were growing or thriving? How would you know? Jesus says it really comes down to this, right? How would you distinguish between a person who doesn't know anything about Jesus, doesn't believe in God at all, which I think that's many of us, some of us in this space. That's fine. I'm so glad you're here. But the distinguishing part is how would that be any different than a joy that a person who follows Jesus feel? Like, what would the difference be? It would be joy. Look, let me read this part right here where it says this. As the Father has loved me, he continues, so have I loved you in verse 9. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be full. How do you know? It's joy. But he says not just any joy, not earthly joy, it's his joy. The joy that he's experiencing with you as you're going through these things that are hard and difficult. These character-building moments are actually drawing you closer to him. You're growing closer to Jesus. You're abiding more in his love. It doesn't draw you away. It brings you closer to him, where you're experiencing more and more of his grace in your life. And so, yes, you can feel joy without Jesus. I do sometimes, right? We can. That's totally possible. You get a grade on an exam that you've been studying forever, and you get the A or whatever grade you were trying to achieve. Of course, you're going to feel joy in that moment. The job that you wanted, yes, you're going to feel joy. Some of you who are been married a while, do you remember what that first date was like? Do you remember what the first date was like? Okay, thank you. Jeez. We need another men's retreat. Okay, listen. Yeah, right? That moment. There's something joyful about that, right? Of course. But when things are not so good, is there joy? And that is the distinguishing mark here. Because it's not fully complete yet. Is it possible that in my abiding that I'm experiencing God's love so much so that even when crap is happening, I am still thriving? I'm still growing. Is it possible when there are disappointments after disappointments after disappointments where things did not work out, where God is trying to work in all of that, that you are growing and now you are growing in such a way that you are thriving and growing? Yes. Does that mean you feel happy? No. Does it mean that you are growing and finding this contentment? Yes, absolutely. And I know this because when you've been with people who have struggled and they feel this sense of like, I still have Jesus, there is this contentment that they can move on. Even though they have nothing, they have somehow everything. Some of you don't know Larry Spalding, but Larry planted Missio really early on in the early days. And one time, Larry said to me, hey, I got voluntold to go on a missions project with my wife. I was like, that's brilliant, voluntold. So he went on this medical project, and they were working in orphanages. And I asked him, hey, when he came back, what was the most meaningful, impactful moment? And Larry said to me, the most meaningful moment was when I was watching these kids that had just come to Christ. We had been serving them for almost 2 or 3 months on the ground, medical resources, everything that they could possibly need. And when we had actually made the invitation to follow, there was this extraordinary joy. But he said that the real moment when it came, it was when he was watching them kick cans as if they were soccer balls. They had no running water for months. They were kicking cans, you know, going to the well with very dirty water, but they were kicking cans and having a great time. And there was this joy on their face. And he said, at that moment, I realized that they'd had nothing, but then at the same time had everything. That was joy. The distinguishing mark of this abiding in Christ is this idea that even when things are not going well, there is this sense that it's going to be okay. There's this joy. So that's it. That's the picture. This inner dwelling of the Spirit working in us to build this character so that we are flourishing and thriving and becoming our full, unique selves to this God who is saying, stay connected to me. And asking us to ask for these things so that we can become who we have always wanted to be. And we could probably paint that picture and put it on a wall and admire it, right? And we should probably say that's pretty good, and it really is a beautiful picture. Except I Googled this, bear fruit. Now, I just want you to know I'm a visual person, so I usually like to look at artwork, and there was a lot of artwork, but I want to say, I was intrigued by the bears. I just couldn't help myself. It's just outrageous. At some point, the one that really is the bear and the banana peel, right? As if I was going to eat the bear. Of course, this gumball, I don't know what that is. It's really alarming. But trying to eat that bear, right? It was the idea that fruit should be what? Eaten. I thought, okay, there's something to that. That fruit just on a vine, while it might be gorgeous, is not really the goal of the fruit. That it doesn't ripen until it is actually and fulfilled, until it's actually offered and eaten. And Jesus says it this way, that this is the outcome. This is how you really know as you're experiencing this abidingness in your joys, that it is overflowing, so it becomes this love, if you will, a giving away of yourself. He says this in verse 12, after he's painted this gorgeous picture, which must have floored the disciples. I mean, they just must have been like, what are you talking about? He says in verse 12, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. And you are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. The ultimate expression of all of this is to be a super friend. A friend. And what is a friend? A friend is this person who is loving sacrificially and generously. Your circumstances, our stuff that we go through to get to this pinnacle place of whatever it is in the season we have is not just for you. It is so that we can offer all of that into the world so that others can have it too. Right? That we love others in the full way that God has always designed and wants us to live. That is the ultimate fruit bearing. That's the big picture. That's the momentous moment. Not to hoard everything that we've gone through, but to share that. And to share that with those who need it and need us. Because that is the great expression. That is when fruit grows. Never in isolation, always in community, and always with those who need us the most. That's the picture. To love others in that sacrificial, beautiful way. To what end, though? He says this, you did not choose me in verse 16, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you, so that you will love one another. Right? That idea, again, coming back, that if I am so close to the Father, and I know everything, and I've gone through this whole process, I should know instinctively what his will is. And I should ask for that because I've been so close to him that that is exactly what he wants for me. And I will ask for that thing. And so I want to see people loved. I want to see myself grow. I should be asking for how I can become this flourishing person so I can love others in the kingdom. He says it a little bit further earlier in John 13, just after he washes his disciples' feet. It's not on the screen, so don't. Right. Oh, it is. Oh, I put it in there. Did I put it in there? Oh, my gosh. You're really fast. John 13, right? No, he's like already typing it in. 34, it says this, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Right? That's the ultimate expression, that everyone is going to know our love. And be what? Invited to flourish. That's the invitation. That's the ultimate expression. And so to kind of give you an example of this, early on when we started Missio, some people were like, why Southwest Portland? And it really came at this moment. There's a little coffee shop out in Multnomah Village, and it's called Village Coffee. And we didn't really know where Missio was going to go. We certainly had asked a lot of people, because there are lots of churches in Southwest Portland, and we did a survey. We just went door to door and said, hey, has anyone ever invited you into that space over there? We only took 10 doors right next to the church, and not a single neighbor in any church next to the church were ever invited into a church. And so we're like, okay, let's put a church here that's inviting. And we made a very serious moment to do that. But it didn't really come to fruition until we were at a Village Coffee, and someone that we'd seen week over after week come through who looked like they had everything put together came in completely disheveled. I mean, like, something had really happened. And we had asked, like, hey, what's going on? And he said, well, I basically lost it all. And I'm in total despair. Of course, at that moment, we were thinking, oh, okay, like, hey, why don't you sit on the front patio of one of our friends' house? And we sat and we just talked for hours, really. And it was there that he began to express everything. And we had people who had gone through similar things and just pouring out their lives. And I remember at that moment, you know, after a couple of visits, he looked at us and just said, like, you know, you're all a little bit different than what I'm used to seeing when I think of Christians. I thought, okay, well, why don't you come to this thing, this community dinner thing? It's real chill. We do it every Friday night. Just come, hang out. And then it was like everybody was the same. And then this is a guy who believed nothing in God. He was anti-God in every way, anti-religious, anti-theology. He hated the theology. He couldn't stand the church, the ecclesiology. He could kind of get the Christology, but that didn't make sense to him either. He couldn't understand Jesus. But then when he said the turning point for him was when he realized everybody was authentically the same. That no longer were a few the anomaly, but this was just how people lived. They were loving one another. And somehow, he came to an expression on a Sunday. And he came to an expression on Sunday, and he realized that there was this reality that everyone was like him. You know that moment where we say, hey, go greet somebody new? He was like, oh my gosh, this is the weirdest thing ever in the world. And then everybody was just connecting with him. And over time, it was like at that moment that he was having coffee with somebody he had never met before, experiencing that same invitation. Now, what is so unique about that is that at the point that he realized that there was something deeper, he decided that he wanted to follow Christ himself. And so the invitation was to flourish. And he stayed with our church for many years until he was, you know, he moved on. But this is the goal. This is always the goal. And this is how we've always done it at Messiel. That we always flourish because we are this community that doesn't believe in dead ends. That no one should ever think that there's a dead end in their lives. That if we were really, truly loving one another, the greatest proof of all our theology, all our lessons learned, is that we are bringing people into the kingdom. The invitation, y'all, is that we can all truly flourish. And so let me just end on this, and I'll bring the band forward. Are we thriving? Are you thriving? If you say, I don't think so, could it be that you're avoiding this invitation to grow? Could it be that you're avoiding something that God is asking you to step into, to ask for fruit? If you say that, I think I am, but you're not experiencing any joy, it could be very well, or for that matter, you're doing a lot of things. You're serving, you're doing lots of things, but you don't feel like you're thriving. Could it be that you're still treating Jesus like he's just the king but not a friend? And so you're trying desperately to bear fruit, to earn his love, but not actually stepping in and abiding in his love? Could it be that maybe you just need to abide for a season in his love? Connect with him? To know who he is and what he wants for your life, for our lives? You see, because it starts with abiding, it continues with abiding, and it really ends with abiding in Jesus. So how are you abiding in a loving God who comes and says to you and to me, to us, I want you to flourish. I want you to thrive. I want you to grow. How are you abiding in him now to receive that?